Welcome to Climate Matters. I am Peter Savio, and I am here with Rabbi Glenn Jacob with the New York Interfaith Power and Light, and we've been discussing the religious and ethical and moral foundations for responding to global warming. And we've also been talking about engagement in democracy and what that could mean, particularly from a moral perspective. Welcome again, Glenn.
Pleasure to be back.
Excellent. And we were just starting to talk about examples of discussions with elected officials and how the moral argument proved persuasive. And I suspect that many in the audience would be a little bit surprised by that. There's a degree of cynicism and a degree of polarization and divisiveness that you would suspect in the media, or one would expect based on media reports. How has your experience been different, and could you talk about an example or two?
Yes. I'll give you a quick overview, which is the media example of a politician is just that. It's a caricature. I find that most politicians on many areas of concern to them are quite sincere and are truly engaged. There are a few outliers out there. Nonetheless, I find that most politicians do want to do a good job by their constituents. Now, on the national level, we do have a very unique example. A few years ago, when Representative Gibson was still New York 19th District Representative in Washington, D.C., he was dilly-dallying, going back and forth about whether to submit a resolution founding the Climate Solutions Caucus, which is Republicans and Democrats in the House of Representatives. Finally, as he was taking so long, a delegation of religious leaders in Washington, D.C. at the national level, led by the Quakers, the Friends, made an appointment and went to his office and spoke to him directly. When they got to his office and sat down, the first thing he said to them was, "Where have you been?" In all of the lobbying of Representative Gibson of to found the caucus or not found the caucus, religious voices had been completely absent, except for those against it. What Representative Gibson told his delegation that visited him was he thought that the houses of worship in his district didn't care because they never said anything to him. They were completely silent. So they assured him that there were many churches and synagogues in his district that did care about climate change and wanted him to push the resolution. At the end of the conversation, he basically agreed that he would offer up the resolution to found the Climate Solutions Caucus, but he also asked in return, "If I do this, I expect you, the national leaders, and my churches and synagogues in my district to stand behind me and lend me their moral authority to found a Climate Solution Caucus in order to address climate change." That's religion making a difference.
Mm. And the Climate Solutions Caucus was, you mentioned Democrats and Republicans. Do some describe this as, do they call it the Noah's Ark, where one must
bring... Yes. No, every Republican who wants to join can join automatically. Every Democrat who wants to join can only join if they are paired with a Republican counterpart.
Mm.
So the Climate Solutions got up to over 60 members when the Republicans were in power. With the last election, a lot of Republicans retired who were actually in the caucus or lost their elections. So now the Climate Solutions Caucus, which is still alive, is now rebuilding.
And do you think the experience or the model that you described in terms of meetings with Congressman Gibson, where he was unaware of the positions of a significant portion of his churches and faith community and synagogues and mosques. Is that a lesson for that could be applied more broadly, where if people were involved, if our voices were heard, perhaps we might see some different results?
It's an old lesson in American democracy. American democracy is only as good and as varied and as dynamic as the people who are involved. So for religious people, the idea of getting involved and talking to our elected representatives is almost a feeling of going outside of the religious realm, which is basically, you know, the church, the synagogue, the mosque, the Guadalajara. But in the community, only a little. And that's a pushback, and that's deliberate by other groups who want to keep out moral voices. The biggest threat to democracy from a religious point of view is not one side or the other in any given debate. It's the apathy. It's the silence in the middle. And that's why moral certitude is such a powerful argument at certain points in the legislative process. Because it's the apathy or it's the silence that is the biggest threat to not only passing legislation, but now in New York State, we're at the point of legislation being passed. We have 3 years to watch how it's implemented, except I don't want my religious people, my volunteers and my members to sit back passively and watch it be implemented. There still has to be a moral voice working with the agencies, working with the governor's office, working with legislators, to make sure that the implementation of this Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the mouthful of it, is implemented in a just, fair, and moral manner.
Right. So that it's been a major step to pass the legislation, and now we need to see follow through, including the various state agencies and the yet to be named Climate Leadership, Climate Action Council members and Environmental Justice Council members. So that ongoing engagement is necessary and appropriate to make sure this is launched and achieves speed and scale.
Well, it also addresses a fallacy that the legislation made clear that a technical solution is the only vehicle to a clean carbon future. And that's just not true. It's going to be multi-pronged, and it's not just technology. It's going to be human behavior. It's going to be human relationships. It's going to be community actions. So for houses of worship and the regional groups that they're organized under, it's not just that we using, let's say, a church or a synagogue as an example, or we could use a mosque. It's the same way. The building is not just energy. Yes, that's the biggest chunk. So it's also the food that they consume in that building, how they cook it, how they serve it, and what choices they make when they buy it. It's consumables that are used throughout the rest of the building. Are they buying stuff that can be reused, or does it have to be thrown away? How are they disposing of their waste? Another major issue throughout New York State that is a problem for climate change because it releases methane. And finally, there is the community work. How important is it for the congregation to be an anchor in the community to model and demonstrate that such behaviors are possible?
That is a really compelling case Glenn. So thank you for that. You've been listening to Climate Matters, and this is the second segment of three in a discussion with Rabbi Glenn Jacob from New York Interfaith Power and Light. Thank you again, Glenn.
Thank you.